One sign that the practice was on the right path was the feeling of sober sadness that arose through constant contemplation of the three characteristics, which evolves into nipita, or disenchantment. And it's important, this is my own commentary. There is a sober sadness, there's a disenchantment, but it's important to recognize that this quality of nipita is very bright and radiant. It's like there's a culminate, there's a many, many discourses of the Buddha where he gives a progression of the development of the mind, where it's accessed through a variety of ways, sometimes through virtue, sometimes through wise attention, sometimes through through faith. Then the Buddha starts going through a series that are conditioned. There's a rising of delight, and then with the arising of delight, there's an arising of joy, of rapture. With the arising of joy, there's the arising of tranquility, and with the arising of tranquility, there's the with tranquility as the condition, then there's a rising of happiness. And with the arising of happiness, then there's the arising of samadhi, of firm establishing of the mind. With the firm establishing of the mind, there's knowledge and vision of the way things truly are. Then with the arising of the knowledge and vision of the way things truly are, is a rising of disenchantment. So it's not a negative mental state. And it's sometimes, because we use the language and we hear it described, all I have to do is just be averse and miserable to everything and I'll get enlightened. It's not how it works. The heart is really bright, and there's this steady, stable of what state of well-being, and then there's this recognition of, gosh, this is really problematic, and there's a pulling back, disenchantment. Bhikkhu Bodhi for a while translated this as disgust, which is a very strong word in English. But it's also, he was using it in its original etymology, in the sense of losing the flavor for, in terms of gust, in terms of gustatory, and disgust, so losing the taste. And so it's that losing the taste that allows the mind to step back from attachment. Because that sense of it, attachment and identification is just so deeply rooted, and so it's this sense of the contemplation and development of the path. These are signs of the path arising. So then Ajahn Chah, this is a quote from Ajahn Chah: an illumination takes place, and then disenchantment sets in. Disenchantment with his body and mind. Disenchantment with things that arise and pass away and are unstable. You feel it wherever you are. When the mind is disenchanted, its sole interest is in finding the way out of all those things. It sees the suffering inherent in the world, the suffering inherent in life. When the mind has entered this state, then wherever you sit, there's nothing but impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not-self. There's nowhere to take hold of anything anymore. If you sit at the foot of a tree, you hear a discourse from the Buddha. If you go to a mountain, you hear a discourse from the Buddha. You see all trees as just one tree. You see all creatures as of one species. You see that nothing deviates from this truth, that all things come into existence, become established, begin to change, and then cease. Lumpa made clear that the disenchantment that he was referring to was not an expression of aversion, for that would have been simply another expression of craving. This disenchantment was the feeling that arose through seeing how mistaken it had been to consider impermanent phenomena as self or belonging to self. It was waking up from the enchantment of body and mind. This is not the monkey, and this is a quote, "This is not the monkey feeling disenchanted. It's feeling disenchanted with being a monkey." Lumpa maintained that the word, and he uses the Thai word, "maina," sort of uncertain, not sure. "Maina," unsure, not certain. Awareness of the present mental object as changeful, fluid, unreliable, of uncertain outcome, was the unerring guide right from the very beginning of meditation practice until its final conclusion. When mental objects were recognized as changeful, he said, it was like breaching the boat of conceit below the waterline. The sense "I am" listed to one side and sunk. Lumpa taught that complete liberation of the mind was the result of creating momentum where the tirelessly repeated inner contemplation of the three characteristics in a mind freed from the hindrances was complemented by a steady effort to be mindful and alert to the three characteristics in daily life. Eventually, the constant repetition and increased profundity of the contemplation reached a tipping point and bore fruit. Although Lumpa was reticent about talking in detail about the higher stages of practice, he did on occasion make some important observations. In one of his discourses, he described the case of the meditator who has, quote-unquote, a glimpse of Nibbana, but is unable to fully integrate his understanding and has to return to the work of wisdom until the mind is fully mature. It's a quote. It's like someone who is in the middle of stepping across a stream with one foot on the near bank and the other on the far side. They know for sure that there are two sides to the stream, but are unable to cross over it completely, and so they step back. The understanding that there exist two sides to the stream is similar to that of the Gotrabhu Pukala or the Gotrabhu Jitta. Now, there's a Gotrabhu means change of lineage, sort of between the unenlightened and the enlightened. It means that you know the way to go beyond the defilements, but are still unable to go there, and so you step back. Once you know for yourself that this state truly exists, this knowledge remains with you constantly as you continue to practice meditation and develop your barami. You are both certain of the goal and the most direct way to reach it. Right view has been established. The meditator knows the right and the wrong way of practice. They steer between the extremes of pleasure and pain and gradually move down the path of equanimity, but still make mistakes. They know that treading on thorns is painful, but they still can't always avoid doing so. But through constantly laying aside the tendency to attach to all that is pleasant and unpleasant in the world of experience, insight deepens until finally they become, quote-unquote, a knower of the worlds. When the mind is completely seen through personality view, all doubts and attachments to precepts and practices disappear. And now the mind of the practitioner is, quote, in the world but not of it. Lumpa made a comparison with a natural separation of oil and paint in a bottle. You're living in the world and following the conventions of the world, but without attaching to them. When you have to go somewhere, you say you are going. When you are coming, you say you are coming. Whatever you are doing, you use the conventions and language of the world. But it's like the two liquids in a bottle. They're in the same bottle, but don't mix together. You live in the world, but at the same time, you remain separate from it. The mind doesn't create things that arouse sense contact. Once contact has occurred, you automatically let go. The mind discards the experience. This means that if you're attracted to something, you experience the attraction in the mind, but don't attach or hold on fast to it. If you have a reaction of aversion, there is simply the experience of aversion arising in the mind and nothing more. there isn't any sense of self arising that attaches and gives meaning and importance to the aversion. In other words, the mind knows how to let go. It knows how to set things aside. Why is it able to let go and put things down? Because the presence of insight means you can clearly see the harmful results that come from attaching to all those mental states. When you see forms, the mind remains undisturbed. When you hear sounds, it remains undisturbed. The mind neither takes a position for or against any sense objects experienced. This is the same for all sense contact, whether it be through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, or mind. Whatever thoughts arise in the mind can't disturb you. You're able to let go. You may perceive something as desirable, but you don't attach to that perception or give it any special importance. It simply becomes a condition of mind to be observed without attachment. This is what the Buddha described as experiencing sense objects as just that much. The sense bases are still functioning and experiencing sense objects, but without the process of attachment, stimulating movements to and fro in the mind. Having gained such clear and penetrating insight means it is sustained at all times. Whether you are sitting meditation with your eyes closed, or even if you are doing something with your eyes open, whatever situation you find yourself in, be it in formal meditation or not, the clarity of insight remains. When you have unwavering mindfulness of the mind within the mind, you don't forget yourself. Whether standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, the awareness within makes it impossible to lose mindfulness. It's a state of awareness that prevents you forgetting yourself. Mindfulness has become so strong that it is self-sustaining to the point where it becomes the natural state of the mind. These are the results of training and cultivating the mind. And it is here where you go beyond doubt. Lumpa said that realizing that the constant arising and passing away of all phenomena in accordance with causes and conditions is a fixed, invariable truth, is to find the only kind of permanence that exists. Realizing this truth of an unchanging changefulness is, he said, the end of the path that needs to be followed. In terms of the Four Noble Truths, the framework for all of Lumpa's practice and teaching, by bringing the eight factors of the Noble Path to maturity, suffering is comprehended, and with factors sustaining suffering abandoned, suffering ceases. Lumpa said, "It is as if an arrow has been pulled out of your heart.